Order, House Resources, it is 1:00. Let the record show that present are Representative Edgemond, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Roses, Co-Chair Gatto, and myself, Johnson. Also, let the record show that Representative Guttenberg and Coring are excused. For important information, for those that didn't hear, we are going to, let me get my numbers right here, start with HB 40. We're waiting on a CS for the other bill, so with that, welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be heard on House Bill 40. House Bill 40, I believe, do you want me to actually make a complete sentence, or should I just actually stumble at like the second word and?
Whatever you're comfortable with. It's your show.
House Bill 40 does what I think needs to be done to protect public access to fishing streams in the future. Right now, Alaska has some of the best public access to fishing streams, hunting areas of any place in the world, and certainly of any place in the country. But we also stand at a point in our history where we're poised to make the same mistakes the other 49 states have had. If you go to Montana, if you go to Massachusetts, what you see are rivers that were once great fishing rivers, or rivers that are still great fishing rivers that people can't fish. Rivers that people hear about, but they can't afford to access. In Montana, there are just story after story of wealthy people who've moved into the state, who've blocked off public access to rivers like the Ruby River, rivers like the Missouri. And unless you have the money to pay maybe a rancher, or unless you have the connections to get access to the river, you just hear about the trout fishing on those streams. In Alaska, it's different. In Alaska, we can walk up and down a fishing stream with our friends, with our family, and fish for trout bigger than they are anywhere else, for salmon as big as they are anywhere else. And our access is largely unimpeded. But we're at a point where that can change. Let me start out and tell you what this bill doesn't do, because last year was a little bit confusing. I talked about a few things, and people thought, well, those are great ideas. Well, they're great ideas that already exist. Right now, the Department of Natural Resources can buy or could even condemn, though we limited the rights of eminent domain very substantially last year, can buy land. They can buy land to access a river if they want. So this bill that says we want the Department of Natural Resources and Fish and Game to sort of focus their efforts in the future, we're not telling them to do something they don't have the power to do right now. We're just asking them to focus. The Department of Natural Resources has done very little in the past. They haven't been directed to in the past. They haven't had the money in the past to buy public access. We haven't really needed to buy public access. Here's the problem. There are streams like Montana Creek up in the valley, or the Anchor River down on the Kenai Peninsula, Deep Creek on the Kenai Peninsula, Willow Creek, Little Willow Creek, the Salcher River up by Fairbanks, that right now are prized fishing streams for Alaskans. They're places where we have wild trout, wild grayling, wild salmon, wild steelhead, and they're envies of people who live outside of the state. But the reason we can fish large stretches of those rivers is that the private property owners who own the banks have not said no trespassing. They've not stopped people from accessing those waters. They can, and they haven't. And the reason they haven't is the lands where people fish are undeveloped. Nobody's built cabins. Nobody's built lodges. Nobody's put up fences. One day that will change, just like it's changed in Montana, just like it's changed in Montana, just like it changed 100 years ago in Massachusetts. That will change here. And so what House Bill 40 does is it says the state should focus on those areas where we're going to lose public access and purchase easements, purchase land rights, so that the public will maintain access in the future when those lands are developed. Folks from the Department of Natural Resources are here. They'll tell you if you want to hear it. Today, when the state gives away land, we retain access. We retain access to the river and along the river. It's the result of a law we've had on the books for about 20 years now. But lands that were disposed before that law came into effect, or lands disposed by the federal government under ANILCA, those lands were given away and no public access was kept. And that's why you have the situation you have on the rivers I talked about before. Those are largely ANILCA selections. The federal government gave those lands away under the ANILCA process without retaining any public access rights. So House Bill 40 essentially directs the Department of Fish and Game and Natural Resources to work together to identify those places, those streams that are important to Alaskans that are lined with private property, and says, please go ahead, find the places where we want public access in the future, and focus on maybe negotiating purchases and easements with the landowners. The bill does not intend to take land away from anybody. It's very clear that the eminent domain law we passed last year remains in effect, and there's nothing in this bill that says specifically to expand the rights of eminent domain beyond what are in the bill, beyond what was left last year. And the intention really is to pursue voluntary land trades, voluntary land purchases with willing landowners, and that's discussed throughout the bill.
Before we go on, let the record show that Representative Wilson and Representative Seaton are present. Any questions of the sponsor at this point?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The eminent domain bill refers to taking of private property for public use, and this sounds like a public use. So my feeling is the state could declare eminent domain over river banks without taking the whole piece of property. And I guess I'm asking, is that correct?
Well, actually, last year we rewrote the bill, so the state actually can't do eminent domain to get trail access, recreational access. Remember, that was a big debate last year. I think there's still some remaining small lingering rights the state has to do eminent domain for small parcels. But if we looked at the law, we'd find that we pretty much circumscribe the state's right to take a land by eminent domain. And we really don't want this bill to have. We don't really want to encourage more eminent domain actions by this bill. It's never happened. We've never, by eminent domain, taken somebody's stream bank land in the past, and that's not the intention of the bill. You might be able to find some small rights of eminent domain that are left over from last year's bill, but this bill is aimed at voluntary land purchases and voluntary trades with willing landowners, and there are provisions in here that say if a party doesn't want to trade with you, just move on to another parcel and see if you can get another parcel. We're not trying to create land disputes through this bill. We're trying to solve them.
Just a follow-up. At least in urban areas, some parcels of property are a quarter acre and have riverfront, of which 60 feet is riverfront. It's really difficult for a person that owns a quarter acre to give up the one piece of land that includes the riverfront. You envision that really what you're dealing with is more remote land to protect it from future takings, and that you really not interested in dealing with the ones that are urban.
Right, you're not. And the rivers that this bill focuses on are essentially remote rivers. And what we're asking the Department of Fish and Game and Natural Resources to do is focus on those areas that haven't been developed. The ones that have been developed, you're right, probably the private property owners aren't going to want to sell. They built their cabin there for a reason. Some might be fine with selling an easement, and you can negotiate an easement if you have a willing landowner where they sell you easement rights, you leave them the right to place their boat within the easement, you leave them the right to access across the easement. They might sell something like that, and that might be a good idea. But you're going to have more likelihood of getting access, and you're going to do it for less cost if you try and focus on areas that haven't been developed at all. And that's really the point of this bill. We want to try and get the public access before the lands are developed, because in places like Montana, when they try and buy back developed lands, they buy these tiny little parcels every year. Every year they buy another 100 feet here or another 100 feet there. They can't afford to buy a developed ranch back. And that's what we're trying to avoid, because if we wait until all of these rivers are lined completely with cabins or lodges, we'll never get those rivers back. That's why you have to act first now.
Thank you. Any other questions? Before we go on, we do have Dick Milius and Tina Cunning online from Fish and Game and DNR if you have any questions to address to them. Any other questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, on page 3, line 28 and 29, it says, before February 1st of each year, the commissioner and the commissioner of Fish and Game shall submit a plan to acquire public access to fishing waterways. But in your sponsor statement, you said it's in the third paragraph, it says the commissioner is directed to take action as funding is available. So this says he shall do this, and if there's not been extra funding, can you kind of explain that a little bit?
What we want to do is push them as far as we can legally, but not make them do what we can't do. So we want them to submit a plan for how we're going to get public access back. If the legislature decides not to fund it, they can't do it. So it's essentially a paper plan. It focuses their attention. We want them to focus their attention on the places that where public access is important. But if they come to the legislature and the legislature says, you know, we just don't have the money this year, that's the answer. So you can't. This bill doesn't do anything to force them to buy the land. It just forces them to focus into the future on those areas where we want to retain the right of Alaskans to fish and hunt and recreate. And I think the folks within the agency that I've spoken to said that would actually be a helpful exercise to get them to focus on this, because they really haven't been doing that to a large degree in the past.
Follow up?
Please, yes, ma'am.
I like the bill, by the way, so I'm not trying to do anything against your bill or anything, but I am concerned because if the legislature doesn't give them extra funds, and but this bill is telling them to work on a plan, and that will take time and effort and things like that. So I'm just a little concerned that if we don't give them the money, then they're going to. I mean, I don't know where this puts them, and I'm concerned about that.
Through the chair. Representative Wilson, when they come up with their first plan and it says, we found areas on the Yankee River or Montana Creek where we need to buy public access back, they come up with the plan. In the worst case, the legislature says no and doesn't fund it. That plan just sits there, I guess, on the shelf and forever if the legislature never funds it. And they don't have to come up with a new plan every year. That plan will just sit there. I hope that doesn't happen. But if the legislature really weren't interested and a new governor really weren't interested in protecting public access and because of the cost or whatever reason, you would just do the one plan. There's a fiscal note for, I think, $20,000 or $40,000 for two of the agencies. They'll get adjusted as this bill moves along. I think they're going to go down. But so the fiscal note pays for that first plan. And if nobody wants to act on it, that'll be a shame. The fiscal notes, I think we got today. I saw some fiscal notes.
You should have a fiscal note in your.
Oh, I looked. I didn't see it. That doesn't.
It's right there.
Right here.
Why I didn't see it. Okay.
Yep. Right. $58,000 for.
Okay. We've got a couple of amendments to knock those fiscal notes down. There was some. One of them was my fault with the language in the bill, and we can talk about possible amending language.
Any additional questions for the sponsor? At this time, I'd like to take public testimony. I think we do have one person online. Ricky Geese, are you there from Soldotna?
Yes, I am.
And I'd like to keep this as brief as we could. So, but please go ahead. We're not gonna put a timer on it, but let's try to be brief.
Yes, my name is Ricky Geese. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We have submitted a letter of support in favor of HB 40. We support its legislative aims. I'll just add a couple of things that Representative Guerra was speaking about. I think it is important. We work in partnership with both DNR and ADF&G on the Kenai River, and we're also looking at other river systems on the Kenai Peninsula. We would find this very helpful. To get upper division strategic planning and cooperation between DNR and ADF&G on these issues. We also think that this is a timely measure to support. Along the Kenai River, we have seen a doubling of property values every couple years here, and we think that trend will spread to other river systems across Alaska. And the sooner that we ensure the public has access to these fishing systems, we think that in the long run, it'll save money to do it sooner rather than later. We also support the amendment by on page 2, lines 20 through 21, delete.
Can we wait till we get to the amendments before we start commenting on them, please?
Sure. Okay. So we strongly support this, and we feel there is great need for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else online? I think not. Is it Fogles? Are you here to testify or just to answer questions?
Testify.
Please come ahead. state your name for the record, et cetera, et cetera.
For the record, my name is Ed Fogles. I'm the Acting Deputy Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources, our staff have reviewed this bill. We do agree that these rivers that are listed in this bill are very important rivers to the state. They receive intensive public use for recreational sport fishing. There are a significant amount of private land along most of these rivers, and we believe that there are currently access problems, and there may be more access problems along these popular rivers in the future. I would like to point out, in reviewing the bill, we did have a comment on a kind of a specific point on Section C under 3805015, the section that reads, the commissioner may not obtain a property interest in land under B of this section unless the commissioner has made not less than an equivalent amount of state land available for disposal for private use. That word amount to us is maybe a little bit, maybe not the best word. We're not quite sure, since some of the lands that we may be acquiring won't be in fee simple. They may be right-of-ways, that it may be better to specify an acreage, so that if we acquire a certain amount of acreage, then we would be required to dispose of a certain acreage. So we just wanted to point that out. And then also
for the committee, I think we're on page 3, line 21.
Right.
Correct?
I'm sorry. You're right. Yes. Starting on line 21.
So everyone knows where we are.
Okay, right.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. And then we'd also just like to point out that this provision, is, we sort of called it the known net loss provision, is keyed into Section B, starting on line 15 of that same page, where the commissioner may use money from the public access fund. And just to point out that public access fund is defined in statute as you can only put money in that from individuals or corporations, so no state funding would be in that access fund. So to us, it seemed like Section C, the known net loss provision, was specifically tied only to monies from individuals or corporations, not from state funds. So we just wanted to point that out as something that the committee should be aware of. And that's really all I had to offer. I also have with me here in the room today Dick Milius, who's the acting director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and he's he'd be more than happy to answer any technical questions on the land acquisitions for you. Thank you.
Questions for Stephen?
So from your perspective, if the on line 22 equivalent amount was changed to equivalent acreage, that's what you're talking about. And on line 16, after AS 3805874, if it was inserted or other funding sources, is that what you're getting at? So that there's a weak, so that this bill would direct that source or allow other sources of funding to be used for this?
Yeah, I just wanted to make it clear that in our read, if you use, at this time, the way it's written, it seems if you use state funds to acquire these interests, then you would not be bound by this no net loss provision. And I'm not sure I really want to take a stand one way or the other on that. I just wanted to point that out, that was our read, and the committee should be aware of that.
Follow up, anything else? Representative Gatto?
Question. Let's go to page 4, line 11. The definition of a meander mile. I've spent some time on rivers, and does this mean following the center line of the stream? Does it mean following one bank? Because sometimes they divide, they braid. And I'm just curious if there is an official meaning for, because I know meander, mile, not referred other places.
Representative Gatto, in DNR's perspective, through the chair, in DNR's perspective, the meander of a river is measured along the bank, ordinary high water. So,
if I could follow up, is it Please. The right bank or the left bank?
Representative,
where you're facing.
The way we read this bill, it would be on the bank that you were looking at the property acquisition. So if someone had a parcel on the right bank, then that's where we would measure that.
Good point.
Any additional questions? Is there anyone else that would like to testify at this time? Then I will close public testimony. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think that we have some proposed amendments, and if I think Representative Kawasaki, if you want to propose those, and we can number them appropriately, if you'll like.
Sorry, they're
so
not.
Which one you're going to work for?
They're not numbered or lettered.
We'll number number one with the one you start with.
Okay. I'm going to call it Amendment A then. I'd like to move Amendment A. It's the first one on your table.
I messed up mine.
And which?
Did you already shuffle them?
Yep.
Okay. So page 2, lines 4 and 5. Okay.
Number one.
Be number amendment number one.
I'm going to discuss that one first.
You going to offer it?
Yes.
I'll move it. Okay.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number one, letter A, deletes a section, page 2, line 4 and 5. Basically, it removes the requirement of the commissioner of Fish and Game to take action before the program is actually funded. I think that the fiscal note would be adjusted accordingly. It would remove the operating fiscal note for the Fish and Game section. everything else is still the same.
Question, Representative Stevens?
Yeah. Can I ask for a re-explanation of that? I just was trying to find my paperwork. Is it on the table?
And Representative Kawasaki, if you'd like to have the sponsor assist you, that would be perfect.
That would be great.
Acceptable as well.
I'd like the sponsor to assist me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Fogel's called, and the agency folks called with some concerns, and so that's what these amendments deal with, including the two that Mr. Fogel's mentioned. This first one, this is the one that says at page 2, lines 4 and 5. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, this one is intended to resolve a concern by the Department of Fish and Game. We want the state to put together a list of places where they determine we need to protect public access. It's cheaper for them to put together the list, and then at some point down the road, if we get money to buy lands, then start negotiating, than the way we have it written right now, which is before they put together their list, they have to make phone calls to every parcel owner. And so it's just it was worded badly the first time, and it's worded better the second time in the amendment.
Any other discussion on Amendment 1?
Mr. Chairman, I'd remove my objection.
Remove your objection. Okay. Hearing no objection, Amendment number 1 passes. You'll identify amendment, your next amendment as to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Amendment number 2. Amendment 2 is page 2, lines 20 and 21.
And I'll object for discussion, Mr. Chairman.
There is an objection. Representative Kawasaki.
Sure. The basic premise is that last year's bill exempted the Kenai River downstream of Shiklak Lake, and this amendment would remove that exemption.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, could we get some discussion from DNR as to whether this was, or from the sponsors, whether this was DNR's request or was it something different?
Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year there was conflicting testimony back and forth by folks who wanted more access on the Kenai River, who didn't want more access on the Kenai River, and the truth is this bill isn't focused on the Kenai River, and you see that some other streams are named where there are higher public access problems. Mr. Geese was about to testify. There are some boat launch concerns that folks have on the Kenai River, places where they need boat launches. They'd certainly love to be able to negotiate those with private landowners, and if DNR and Fish and Game determine that's a good use of public money, then they'd like to gain some more access on the Kenai River. So the original version of the bill said the DNR or Fish and Game could not find places, we're not allowed to identify places on the Kenai River to obtain more public access. That doesn't make a lot of sense, and there are folks on the Kenai River who frankly would like some more public access and so we'd just like the bill to not exempt the Kenai River from the public access requirement And then remember, this doesn't require that you buy public access on the Kenai. It just leaves it there as a place that's eligible for fishing game and DNR to say, wait, that spot of land is a priority.
Do you maintain your objection?
No, I'll remove my objection.
Any additional objections? Hearing none, Amendment 2 passes. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd move Amendment number 3.
And there are only three, correct? Yes, ma'am. There are only three, right?
Yes.
So this is the last one. Representative Wilson?
Well, he can explain it first if he wants.
Okay.
But which part do you object to?
It's the last one. It's already, it doesn't say acreage in the bill. It says amount already.
Yeah, this is a new
it's backwards.
Version.
Okay.
It's right backwards.
Okay. Well, we'll just throw it out. No. So what I understand is on the very last one, page 3, line 22, we insert amount and delete acreage. Is that,
thank you.
Is that correct? No.
Insert acreage and delete amount.
But
I thought that's what I said.
Yeah, it is what you said.
That's what he said.
Oops.
But I could be wrong. Thank you.
22.
Okay, and I'm assuming you're going to maintain your objection so we can discuss it. Discussion? I want to address this? Representative sure. Kawasaki and or Representative Guerra?
Do you want to change it?
That's
a typo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this, I suppose you need an amendment to the amendment to make the last thing say insert acreage and delete amount?
I think that would be the proper.
I move amendment to the amendment that changes those two words around. So it would say delete amount, insert acreage.
Are there objections? Hearing none, amendment to the amendment passes. Now we're dealing with Amendment 3. Do you still maintain your objection to Amendment 3
no.
for discussion?
No, I'm fine now.
Any additional discussion on Amendment 3? I'll object because I'd like to have some explanation, just for explanation.
Sure, Mr. Chair. That's fair. Two of the parts of the amendment deal with what Mr. Fogles addressed, and then two address some language problems. So let's go in order. On page 2, line 8. Right now, the bill on page 2, line 8 talks about private land ownership that prevents public access. Well, in truth, the private land ownership isn't preventing public access on a lot of these streams right now. Because nobody is putting up no trespassing signs. What it should say is private land ownership that prevents or may prevent in the future public access. That just recognizes the fact that there are no access problems on a lot of these areas that are lined with private property right now because the landowners don't mind, and so it's the future problem we're trying to address. And that's the same explanation for page 3, line 11. Then page 2, line 26, the commissioner should listen to the public in coming up with a list of places that we deem are priorities to gain public access back. And so we want to say the commissioner shall rather than the commissioner may listen to public comment or entertain public comment. So that's page 2, line 26.
I have a question, if I could. Will that add to the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so because we do something else in the bill. So we want there to be a public comment process. What you don't want is then for people to litigate over a list. So we have a provision in the bill that says once the commissioner hears the public comment, makes the decisions, this isn't something that gets appealed afterwards, so it's not appealable. And I suppose if we determine that in the future that DNR is not doing their job well, maybe we could change that. But I just can't imagine that this is an issue that we should litigate over.
Go on. Oh, sorry, Representative Seed.
We can do it later or at this point, but I'd like to hear the commissioner or Dick Milius's interpretation of shall consider and whether that puts it more of a burden than may consider if they reject proposals by the public. Does a shall consider give us any legal liability or anything else other than the may consider? If you want to do that.
I think that would be a good answer. Mr. Mylius, are you there? Are you here? I'm sorry, I keep seeing you on the phone list, and you're not. You're coming in remarkably well.
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Actually, that was a two-part question. I guess one was the question of whether or not it affected the fiscal note. That's actually under the Fish and Game fiscal note, but I believe the Commissioner of Fish and Game's responsibility at that point. But I believe they had factored in that there would be some public involvement already. So changing the May to shall should not affect the fiscal note. And the second part of the question was, does that create any liability for not following through? And no, because it just says we shall consider the public comments. And this isn't the type of thing I could imagine that we'd really be very subject to litigation over anyhow if we just chose to put somebody on the list or not on the list. In fact, it says they have to be a willing seller, actually, so I guess we wouldn't be putting parcels on the list if somebody objected to it and said they wouldn't sell it, because the very nature of the legislation says they have to be willing sellers.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions while we've got them here?
Just something about language. I mean, I'm used to deal a lot in English, and the amendment or may prevent in the future. Do we need the words in the future? If you have or may prevent,
are you offering that as an amendment to the amendment?
I just want to have a discussion. Okay. Unless there's something I'm missing here, I don't like more words than we need, because it usually somebody will find a way to deal with the question.
I think Representative Gatto is correct. I don't think you need those words. I think it means the same thing either way.
And if I can continue, in that same line, I was looking, it said private land ownership. See the word prevents right after it? What if we had used the word preventing? Then it would apply at any time. Am I correct? Or did I miss something? I'm not asking to change it. I just, when I see something that's a little bit longer than I thought it needed to be.
Through the chair, sir, Representative Gatto, you want to substitute preventing for prevents?
No. Yes. If I put preventing and you didn't add or may prevent, because at any time private land ownership preventing public access applies to now and forever.
Representative Gatto, just as somebody who's practiced law in the past, I'll just give you my gut reaction. What you said a few minutes ago, taking out the words in the future, I don't think that would cause lawyers and judges to scratch their heads, but I think if you just did preventing, I think that would create the risk that the judge would interpret the statute wrong.
Okay. I just love speaking to attorneys.
Anything else you want to try to change that? Or you?
No, I'm fine.
Any other discussion on Amendment 3? Is everyone clear on it?
Mr. Chair, the page 3, line 21, just addressed the last comment by Mr. Fogles, which was that at page 3, line 21, I think if you just delete the words B of, then you achieve the goal of Mr. Fogles. And I can speak more to it if you want me to, but otherwise I'll just leave it at that.
Questions? Representative Seaton? Was that a question? Or
yeah. Just? No, I do have a question here. I'm just trying to figure out whether, Representative Guerra, are you saying if we take out under B of, then we don't need to identify that they can use other funding sources, and does that leave us in the, that may get us to the one aspect of not requiring no net loss, but it does come in to say for this list they can only use those funds and they can't use any other public funds other than that access money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seaton, the public access fund is a fund that was just set up to receive private money, and that's fine. And so what this bill says is the commissioner may use public access fund money to purchase lands, but that also means the commissioner may also use general fund money. It's not stated in here because it doesn't have to be stated in here. So at line 15, the commissioner may use public access fund money. And then starting at line 21, we have this no net loss provision to address something that Senator Wagner had raised, which is he wants, as you're taking land off the public property tax rolls, he'd like to see more land also put back on the property tax roll. So in DNR's disposal program, land disposal program, we want to make sure that in any year that we're identifying land that we purchase under this bill, we also want to make sure we've put into the private sector at least that amount of land through the DNR's disposal policy. And technically, if you don't take out the word under B, the bill doesn't really make sense. What the bill says right now is you only want a no net loss policy if money comes out of the public access fund, but you don't care about the no net loss policy if the money came out of the general fund. And so by deleting the words B, we will have a no net loss policy regardless of where the money comes from. It will just flatly say that if you're going to buy a mile worth of river, if you're going to buy 100 acres worth of land this year, you must have put up 100 acres worth of land at least in the DNR disposal policy, which they do anyway. So it just makes it a flat no net loss policy instead of something you could avoid by shuffling money between one fund or the general fund.
Hello, Representative Seaton.
Yes, and so let's say we have a an intention to build a road along a river, and although you're considering this under for recreational uses, that could be also considered access along a road. Does that mean that DNR cannot obtain any access along that road until they've come forward in that same year and at least released that same amount of acreage? I mean, are we setting up a situation where we're going to have it so that we constrain by this law any other access?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think you're envisioning a case where, let's say, we need to build a road and we need, as part of the road, public access along a river, and let's say it ends up being 5 miles of narrow public access. I think in any year, the DNR's land disposal program, they dispose of way more land than that, or at least they put up for a disposal way more land than that in any year. I can't imagine that there would be a year where you would need so much road access, you know, probably tens and tens and tens of miles along a river, that you would exceed the amount of land that's put up for disposal by DNR. But I suppose you could put in an amendment that said this doesn't, you could exempt access that you got along a road corridor from the requirement.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like the DNR to address it. If they don't have any problems with it, I wouldn't either, but I just want to make sure that we're getting everything on the record. Thank you.
A representative seat through the chair, again, Dick Milius from DNR Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And I don't see that as being a problem because we sell generally at least 3,000, often up to 5,000, or offer up to 5,000 acres of land a year, and I don't envision that we'd be acquiring that much land, especially if we're just primarily acquiring easements along the shoreline.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Satisfied me.
Any other questions, Representative Roses?
I didn't have a question earlier when it was brought up, but some of the statements were just made, again through the chair. Some of the statements were just made sort of did raise a question, and on the line where you were talking about substituting acreage for amount, I understood that, but then a minute ago when you said one of the concerns that was brought up before by one of our senators was they didn't want to see value removed from the tax rolls unless it was replaced. Replacing acreage for acreage doesn't necessarily replace value for value. And so I guess I'm a little bit concerned that if we're amending it for one purpose, but we're stating that we did it for another purpose and they don't match. So that's just, if you could respond to that, I guess.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Roses. I guess a couple of responses. First, I think the importance of public access to fishing streams to me is great enough that if we lost $1,000 worth of taxable property in the process, it wouldn't hurt my feelings any. I think public access to fishing streams is an important enough issue that that I think should stand on its own. I think you do want to have sort of a state policy that says we're going to, you know, if we're going to take land back into the public domain, we're going to keep putting land back into private property ownership too. If you were to reword the bill to say it has to be at least the equivalent value, then you're going to, I mean, I think you're going to do a lot of appraising each time you build up a list like this, like is envisioned in this bill. And I think the answer is going to be, it would be really hard to imagine in any year that you take more valuable property in easements than you put up for sale in the state's disposal land disposal policy. I mean, it's a significant amount of land they put up every year. So I don't think you'll ever run into the problem you're talking about. But if you did, and the state determined, you know, that's a really important piece of public access we need, so the next generation can fish like we fish, I'd hope that we would still get that public access back.
Just to follow up.
Representative.
Thank you. To the chair. No, I wasn't questioning the validity of what we were doing, but just the rationale behind saying this is why we're doing it, but yet, you know, so just want to make clarification there that we did make a distinction between equal acreage is not equal value, and I still don't have a problem with it. I agree with you in terms of the access is for the public far outweighs the loss in revenue, so at least in my opinion. So I don't disagree with you on that.
And Representative Roses, I would also start, I would hesitate to go down the road of this committee making decisions on what the other body may or may not do.
I agree.
So I think that probably is overriding. I think we do what we think is right, and they can do what they think is right, and we'll come back together and work it out. So I think that that's also an issue we ought to look at. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, a quick question of clarification, and I'm probably just missing it here, but on page 3 on the bottom, it says before February 1 of each year, the commissioner and the commissioner of fish and game shall submit a plan. Is that basically saying shall make available a plan? Because the plan would be it would be in-house, and fish and game and DNR wouldn't be submitted to the legislature, wouldn't be submitted to some outside entity.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I think what you say is my intention, that it requires them to come up with a planning document. They may present it to the legislature. I hope they would present it to the legislature. The intention was, if we just had a bill that said you should create a list. Let me go back a moment. By forcing them to sort of create the list and forcing them to come up with a plan, you make them think through the problem. That's what I want to do. But it doesn't require them to take that sort of next smaller step to show the legislature their planning document. I hope they would, but that would really be up to the commissioner. Does the commissioner want to make that a priority of the agency to the legislature that year? And I guess I can't determine what a commissioner will do.
And before we get too far down that road, I think we have an amendment that we're still dealing with. So before we go to additional questions, I'd like to deal with the amendment. And then I'd certainly want to come back. I'd like to, for housekeeping purposes, before I get too lost, I'd like to make sure we deal with that amendment. Any other questions on amendment number 3?
As amended.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chair, I'll remove my objection. I think
we probably both did, so I'll remove mine as well. Any other discussion? Any objections to Amendment 3? Hearing none, Amendment 3 passes. Now, I'm sorry, as amended. Thank you. I appreciate that. I need to be closer so you can kick me out. Now, Bryce, I'm sorry, Representative Edmund, did you get your question answered? I didn't mean to cut you off, but I do want to go back and.
Mr. Chairman, I think I did get it answered, but in the answering of the question, I think it also poses perhaps the question that maybe the committee may want to consider, whether we want this to be submitted to the legislature, whether we think that's necessary relative to what's taking place here.
Reverend Gere, do you have any
Any input into that?
No, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to think quick. I think you could probably require them to do that. That's probably not a separation of powers issue, but that's up to the committee.
Yeah.
Commissioner, do you have any input on to whether or not it would submit it to the legislature or not, or do you have any thoughts on that, or just submitting it to work?
Mr. Chair, I'm not entirely sure that we really have an opinion on that. I don't think it would matter one way or the other.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me put it this way. If it stays the way it is and it just says you'll submit a plan, will we hear about it? Or will you come to us with it automatically?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, I was interpreting the legislation that would require us to submit the plan to the legislature at some point. So that would be my intent anyway.
Follow up?
Well, to me, it doesn't say. So, you know.
You're right.
And
you're
so I think right. That if the sponsor of the bill wants the legislature to hear about it, I think we should say it. And if, you know, it's not that important to me personally, but I know to some it is. So I think we should say one way or another what our...
To whom you want to submit it.
Yeah.
So would you like to submit that as an amendment? Submit to the submission?
Shall submit to the legislature.
Yeah. Mr.
Chairman, I was wondering from DNR Radiff and D's perspective, do they submit a report to the legislature every year anyway? And would this, I mean, I don't want it, so it has to be submitted as a separate report. Right. So if it can be incorporated in the report to the legislature, then that seems to make a lot of sense.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I know that the Department of Natural Resources submits several reports to the legislature every year, and I couldn't recite to you what all those reports are off the top of my head, but I don't know if this particular plan could be tied into one of those reports or not, but we can certainly look into that.
It would be your opinion, though, if we just said submit to the legislature, you could incorporate it into any of those reports without additional cost or grief?
Mr. Chair, I would say I would guess that's probably correct, but I have a hard time answering that fully without actually looking at the full list of the reports that we have to submit. I know we have to submit a report on the lands that we classify every year, and I'm not sure this would really fit in with that report. So it may be cleaner just to submit a separate report.
Representative Guy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a question. When the document says submit to the legislature, does that mean to each member of the legislature or simply a single report to the speaker? Because I think you could satisfy it as a single report to the speaker who hands it off to an aide who says, oh, how interesting, and we never see it. So just that clarification. Is that, I'm not sure how it's done.
I hope that's not the case.
I hope so too.
Big stack of reports.
But I'm just looking for a process that makes certain that at least committee members, if not the body, would receive the report, throw it away if they want to, but to accidentally not get it, so when you submit a report, do you take pains to see that it goes just to the legislature, done, and hope somebody else will duplicate it and send it around, or is it electronic, or are there 60 copies?
Mr. Chair,
I think the cavalry's coming.
I distributed it.
Okay. If it is okay with the committee, I would turn it over to Melanie Lesh, our legislative liaison, who does this for a living.
I think it's okay with you, I think.
For the record, my name is Melanie Lesh. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Natural Resources. Several of our divisions have statutory requirements to submit reports to the legislature. They have different due days in statute, and many times for the reports that reflect the Division of Mining, Land, and Water programs, we will condense all those reports into one, and I will copy it, 60 copies, and deliver it to the Senate Secretary or the Senate President's office, and they will distribute it for us, and likewise with the House. Any other questions?
Yes, thank you, Melanie. As this February 1st date, is that that drawn out of the air, or is that appropriate for a date that fits in with the other reports that are generated so that we get everything as one package?
That would fit in with some of our other due dates, sir. Okay. Through the chair.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Representative Wilson, would you like to see this report delivered to the legislature, or are you fine with the way it reads?
Well, see, it's not that important to me.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, I think Les probably would like to see it maybe passed on, so.
I think,
I'll make an amendment.
Excellent. Representative Gatto?
Thanks, Mr.
Kind of
Chair.
Kind of what I was fishing for.
Yeah. Page 3, line 21, following the word shall, add the words to the legislature.
No.
28.
Is that right?
29?
No.
Following the word plan.
Well, no, I put it in following the word shall because I thought it fit better.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Then you didn't want to make the amendment.
Yeah, it passed up
your turn. Just submit to the legislature.
Shall submit.
Well, I put shall submit. Well, I'm sorry if I read it wrong. Shall submit to the legislature a plan to acquire, et cetera.
That works.
And make it conceptual, and we'll let a drafter
absolutely
have a
and my good staff there is taking copious notes, I'm sure. Any discussion on the amendment?
Yes.
Any object?
Was that saved to line 29? Is that where that was going?
Yes, that's where I see it. Page 3, line 29.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objections to the amendment? Hearing none. Amendment 4 passes. Any additional questions, comments of the sponsor, Representative Wilson?
Are you ready for a motion?
I would entertain a motion.
Okay, I move. Second, let me look at this. I move House Bill 40, version E, along with its as amended.
Oh, I was hoping to catch you.
From committee with individual recommendations.
Are there objections?
And attached
fiscal notes, sorry.
Are there any objections?
Attached fiscal notes.
Hearing none, HB 40 moves out of the committee. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
And I do want to remind everyone, and I'll remind you again, that before you leave the committee meeting today, please sign the bill. Thank you for your patience, Representative Kelly. We'll now hear HB 87. And I
pre-filed. Do you know where it's going?
I believe we had. Do we have a committee? We do. And is there any more? Welcome, Representative Kelly. Sorry for the delay. I didn't know if you'd have the CS done, or so we went ahead and started without you. It's your show. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'd like to do first is have Sue Stancliffe go through answers to some of the questions that came up at the first hearing, and then I will go through the changes that we've made to the CS after you. Or whenever you want me to, before or after you adopt it.
Okay.
And we won't repeat. We'll try not to repeat from what we said the other day, so we'll keep it short.
I think that I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS, and let's just put it on the table for discussion, and then we'll go from there.
Representative Wilson?
I move that we have the CS for House Bill 87 before us for discussion.
Any objection? Hearing none, we do have the CS for HB 87. Representative Kelly?
Thank you.
Members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Sue Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kelly. Questions that we had last time and we've addressed is Representative Rose's had asked for a legal opinion regarding the state's liability, and we received the legal opinion back, for which all of the members were given copies of. And for the record, it clearly states that since the commission acts only in an advisory capacity and makes no final decisions affecting anyone's rights, they're saying that it does not envision the state being held liable. The other question was regarding funding history of the prior commission, and for everyone, I have enclosed in your packet a copy of the funding history. Ledge Finance, who did the research on this, was able to go back to the funding for 1987, and you could see that it went from two staff down to one staff, and by the time in 1999, when it was just before it was defunded, it was last funded at $86,300. And if there were further questions that I've not answered, I'd be happy to entertain them now. And also, for the record, there are two letters of support, one from the Alaska Outdoor Council and one from the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. Thank you.
Does that Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, could they lead us through the changes that are made between the original bill and CS?
Before we do that, any questions? I will get right back. Any Representative Roses, does that kind of address your question about the legal?
Yes, through the chair. Thank you.
And I don't recall who asked the question about the financing. Maybe it was Representative Seaton. Does this satisfy some of the questions that we had? I know there will be more, but.
It was.
That's right. Well, he shouldn't be sick today. No. okay. Thank you. I just want to make sure that we, as it was presented, answered some of our questions. Representative Seaton? Go ahead.
Oh, I just asked for be led.
Oh, I'm sorry. Changes. Yes. I'm sorry. Apologize. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, going through the changes on page 1, line 13, through page 2, line 12. I had spoken with Representative Seaton about reducing the size of the commission. It is a large commission, and in talking to Tina Cunning and some of the other folks that had been associated with the previous commission, there didn't seem to be any objection to dropping 25% off of that committee. In fact, it seemed to be a positive move. So we've proposed dropping the commission from 16 to 12, which should also have a positive impact on the fiscal note when we get that in its final form. And so the changes are run down through the appointments so that we end up with, instead of 16, 12 members being appointed. On page 2, line 25, there was a suggestion, I think it came from Representative Edgman, that we be consistent in the terms. There was some, not pushback, but a little bit of a concern that when the terms were 2 years, it involves more people in the process and tends to put more people through the system, which makes more people familiar. But there wasn't enough concern for any real pushback on that. So we've changed the terms to be consistent at 4 years. On page 4, Mr. Chairman, I'll just run through all of them if you want and then come back and answer any questions, but okay. Feel free to jump in if you'd like. Page 4, lines 23 to 29, we've got transitional language for the purpose of staggering the members so we don't change out the commission all at once, so we get a historical perspective that survives the terms. There was also concern from several members, including the chair, that perhaps we should leave in the sunset, some sort of a sunset provision. We have proposed that the commission be given enough time to get up and running and perform for a while, so we proposed a sunset date on page 4, lines 19 to 20 of 2014. And that, I think that's it, Mr. Chairman, as far as the changes. And I think they pretty much respond to the concerns that were raised. So we'll be glad to answer any questions.
I know that one question, it may be the question you're going to ask, but there was some discussion about the regional makeup or the makeup of the body, and I haven't heard that being addressed, and I didn't mean to, if that was your question. Would you address the regional makeup,
sure,
if you could?
I discussed that some with Representative Seaton and I think a little bit with Representative Edgman. And that's on page 2, where the makeup of the commission indicates that shall be representative of the diversity of users and uses of federal land in the state. And in talking with Tina Cunning, who had been kind of with the project all the way along, she felt that had allowed a commission that was responsive and reflective of the different users, and it specifically mentions both the uses and the users. It also ties in, because of the reference to the judicial districts, the four judicial districts, reflects that there has to be representation from each of those districts. So I think it does the job the way it is, and in talking to Tina, it seemed like it worked well before, and I just hate to get so specific that we get all tied up and we can't reflect as easily as we might if we leave the language the way it is. So that was our response to that.
Okay. Questions, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have. You know, this is quite different than most of the other commissions. Most of the other commissions that we set up designate seats for people so that when people are being reappointed at some point in time, that we make sure that we maintain that diversity on commissions. I mean, it's throughout, whether we're looking at the ones we've just appointed, like climate change or Bald Eagle Preserves or the Mining Board or all those things. And so I guess I had prepared an amendment as a sample of those diversities, pulling from the other commissions and the requirements that we put for other commissions, because I just worry that if we're establishing something that has it's got a 7-year lead time here, that I worry a little bit that we do specify that we are maintaining the diversity of users and uses in this commission. So I guess I don't know. I could offer an amendment, Mr. Chairman, or just discuss it and find out how the committee feels.
I'd like to discuss a little bit. I'm a little concerned about the vagueness of the diversity of the users and uses. I'm not sure we understand some of the uses and users that we're dealing with 7 and 14 years from now. So I think that's pretty vague, and I'm not sure. I wouldn't like to see a little more nailed down to the makeup of the committee, but it's open for discussion. I think I'd like to discuss it and see what the kind of the feeling of the committee is. Any insights into that from anyone, or are we tilting at windmills? Representative Wilson?
I guess my question is, are we talking about trappers and hunters and fishermen? And I mean, what are the users, I guess?
Well,
my question is.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think that's part of the problem. We are talking about all the folks you talked about. We're talking about in discussions with earlier today, there was a specific example of Doyon having a challenge with the Fed on, I think it was bringing a drill rig across related to a refuge area, how to get access to where they wanted to drill related to a refuge area. So there are all the things you mentioned. There are miners, small miners. There are so many different things that, as I thought about our discussion yesterday with Representative Seaton, it just seemed to me that Sure as you begin to try to cover every one of those, you're going to miss some. And as the chairman As the chairman indicated, do we know today what the uses are going to be in the future? If the uses in the future are going to change, won't we surely have missed something there? So I guess I, after having given it some thought and tried to respond to the committee's concerns, I believe that this covers it. If it doesn't and there is something missing, we certainly as a legislature can change it. So that's kind of where I came down after going through it. And it seemed to work well before. I look back at the record. Did it seem to be lopsided or have a problem? And the conversations I've had indicate that it was not a problem.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Could we go to page 2, line 24? It says, C, a member of the commission appointed by a member of the legislature serves 4 years. That language, it doesn't mean anything to me. I'm a member of the legislature. I'm not appointing anyone. Do we mean the speaker specifically? And I think that's what it means.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, if I might, Representative Gatto, if you refer back up to on the same page to line 3,
right.
Then it would be, just as you say, here it would be the Speaker of the House, and it would be the President of the Senate that would be the ones being referred to.
And I figure that out, but like most statutes, it's really not a good idea to figure things out so much as clarify them. And because when you figure it out, it depends on me figuring versus some other person figuring. And while I don't think it will change anything meaningful in the bill, if it's okay, I think it would be good idea to change it, to change the words to the Speaker or the House Speaker or the Senate President, rather than appointed by a member of the legislature.
I think that Representative Wilson.
I think it would be a lot easier is just that the legislative appointed members shall serve 4 years.
One more time. The legislative appointed members?
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be simpler?
Are some of them other than 4 years?
Or even if you just took out appointed by a member of the legislature, a commission appointed by the legislature serves for 4 years. Just take out by a member.
By a member of, kind of like
member of.
Look at the big bill sponsor.
A member of the commission appointed.
Just by the legislature. Just take out a member of the.
Yeah.
Because the legislature is the speaker by definition
of
the vote.
That might mean that we don't have to vote on it by the legislature.
Not if it says it's appointed by.
Okay. Yeah.
Appointed
okay.
Up above, it says appointed by. But this clarifies it as a member of the legislature. You have a problem with
that? Yeah, that would fit better.
No, Mr. Chairman, that would not be a problem.
Representative Wilson, would you like to make that amendment?
Well, he started.
Would you, Representative Gatto, would you like to make that amendment?
Just to strike the page 2, line 23. Following the word by, strike
24.
Member of.
24.
I'm sorry, line 24, following the word by, strike a member of.
Do I hear any objections? So this would be Amendment 1. So Amendment 1 passes. I suppose we could make that a conceptual amendment to let the drafters have some leeway there, so that, because I'm pretty sure I'm not a drafter, so we'll make that a conceptual amendment. But the concept is to make it clear that the speaker and the president are the legislators doing the appointment. Any additional questions? Representative Seaton had to go to another committee meeting. He did suggest some amendments that specifically line out, and I would like to put them on the table for discussion. Representative Kelly,
Mr. Chairman, if we might, your deal. But if you would like to listen to the testimony, that might help in the discussion, because we do have a couple.
Okay, I think that I would certainly entertain that, because I'm not sold on. On the amendment as well, and so I would at this point take testimony. I think that's.
And I did it at your, after you and I spoke, and actually before that, because of my conversation with Representative Seaton, give that some quite a bit of thought. But it was, you start pinning it down, and we're gonna leave folks out. And I just and as you say, there will be changes certainly on the in the uses and the character of the uses and who's doing it in the future. And if we haven't got that covered, then we're kind of we can be off base. So. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, and I don't see anyone actually in the room, so if you'd like to keep your seat there, you can, or whatever you're comfortable with. But we will. Is there someone? There's someone in the room? Okay.
Tina's here.
Okay, but I have her signed up as just to answer questions, not to testify. So let's go ahead and start the testimony with Rod Arno in Wasilla. Rod, are you there?
Yes, thank you. My name is Rod Arno. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. And the Outdoor Council does support the reestablishing of the Citizens Advisory Committee on Federal Management Areas. As Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council this last year, I participated in a number of federal public processes dealing with access, BLM. We're doing resource management plans, East Alaska, Ring of Fire, and the Bay Area, and these have to do with access. On the refuge, we keep doing comprehensive conservation plans. We've done them on Kodiak, Alaska Peninsula, open for Anoka right now. Parks, we participated in the backcountry management plans, Wild and Scenic River on the Gulkana. And we're also, the Outdoor Council was an intervener in the lawsuit blocking recreational access in the Nebesna Road area. The Outdoor Council also, with the state, is an intervener on navigable waters issues. On game management issues, I participated in refuge service public comments on hunting closures on the Kenai-Skelak Loop area. We are still dealing with land trade areas in the Douglas Creek area before the Board of Game on bear hunting in McNeil. The Outdoor Council has participated before the Federal Subsistence Board on the rural, non-rural determinations. And in all of these cases, it would have been nice to have this commission to help the citizens of Alaska and other individuals who hunt, fish, view, recreate on federal public lands to have this commission. I participated as president of the Outdoor Council back when Stan Lephart was a presiding officer of the Citizens Advisory Commission, and it helped us quite a bit. So the Outdoor Council would like to thank Representative Mike Kelly for introducing this, and we support it wholeheartedly. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Ricky Geese from Kenai, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Ricky Geese, Executive Director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We echo the support of the Alaska Outdoor Council. We interact with the federal government on different levels based on conservation, fishery conservation concerns here on the peninsula, access issues on the peninsula, and we support this bill. Thank you.
Questions, Representative Wilson?
I have a question for Rod.
Okay. Rod, are you still on?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rod, do you feel comfortable with the way it's worded on the diversity of users and uses of federal land in the state for who is appointed to the board?
Yep, through the chair, Representative Wilson. I just know how it worked before, and, you know, at that time when it was established there, it seemed like that there was just a natural process of those that were participating in it, that there were representatives representing the different users of federal public land at that time.
And this is the way it was worded before?
To my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gatto.
Rod, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, this Representative Gatto, since you are the lead dog in the Alaska Outdoor Council, it's important for me to ask you this question. This is an advisory council on federal management, which means on federal lands. Does the state have any influence or have any ability to affect any changes? or do we simply go to the federal government and say, hey, listen up, we have this idea? Because I tell you what the concern is. I'm trying to imagine the federal government having an advisory commission on Alaska state lands composed of people that you and I would both object to, who are simply trying to prevent users from occupying lands, using lands, hunting, fishing, mining, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a long question, but I'm interested in your view on how, A, does the advisory commission have any influence? If not, why do we need it? And B, if the feds did it to us, how would we respond?
If Representative Gatto, I've got a couple of examples this year, and particularly, you know, the one on the navigable waters in the Katy John 3, where, you know, the only way that, in my experience here in the last few years, we've gotten any attention from the federal land managers is in court. And so by having this advisory committee go ahead and say to the legislature, to the administration, you know, that we do need to file suit in court, as the state did on the navigable waters, that's one example. Another example is where we had the environmental organizations, the anti, suing to block recreational access on the Nebesna Road area in the St. Elias Wrangells National Park. It would have been nice to have had the state, you know, to intervene in that suit. Subsequently, it's been settled out of court, and because AOC was an intervener on it, then I did have some input on that and got some changes in that settlement. Where had this advisory committee been put together, there would have been more people besides myself participating in it. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a matter of litigation. It seems the only way we've gotten the attention of the federal land managers lately. And if the shoe was on the other foot and it was the feds had an advisory committee before the state, that'd be fine. I'd like to see them participate in it. Thank you.
Thanks, Rod. I know as executive director, I think you probably represent the views of the membership pretty well. And what I hear you saying is that gives us a situation where we can at least assemble some information, so when we want to sue the federal government, it's not just some wild person out there saying you shouldn't be here, but rather it's a committee whose job it was to assemble information and facts on this. And number two, I like your challenge on the second part. Thanks very much.
Any other questions for Rod or any of the people on teleconference? I would like to have Tina come up and talk to us a little bit, or her designee come up and talk to us a little bit about the makeup, past history, how it's worked in the past, so that we can deal with the makeup issue of this committee and see what we got. Please state your name for the record. And
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask that Dick Milius be present with me. I'm Tina Cunning, Special Assistant with the Commissioner's Office of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I've been involved in the implementation of ANILCA, which is the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, since it passed in 1980.
And for the record, I'm Dick Milius, Acting Director, DNR Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And I've been working on a lot of these state federal issues for 25 years at DNR, so I'm fairly familiar with the previous commission as well.
I think what I'd like to look at is the makeup and the need for designating specific user groups as opposed to the language that's in the bill. Would you spend a little time, and I hate for you to be the devil's advocate, but maybe both sides of that issue, there are pros and cons to either. Which do you prefer?
Mr. Chairman, there are pros and cons. I mean, there's various advisory committees that already advise DNR, primarily Parks, I think, has the most of them. They have the most experience. And a lot of those, some of them do have very specific makeup, like the Wit-Tikchik State Park Advisory Board says you have to have specific villages represented on the council and stuff. And in those areas, it has worked well where you've got a very identified user group for the park. But when you're dealing with the whole state, it becomes, there is such a large group. There are a lot of commissions that do have that kind of requirements, like there's a BLM has an advisory committee that has representatives of specific groups. It's appointed by the director of BLM, the state director. I think whatever you do, you wouldn't want to have those groups have to appoint their own person, because then it does become very difficult. But if you do have a kind of some general, like somebody from industry, I mean, some commissions, they have general guidance where it says you'll have representatives of industry, and so I think that's kind of what we have here. But others have very specific ones. And it's, I don't know, it's real hard to say whether or not that works better. I don't think you want to get too specific, because then you do run into problems of trying to find, you know, pigeonhole people into that type of a group. Tina, I don't know if you want
to. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add to that that the appointments are made by the governor and by the Senate president and the Speaker of the House. And it seems that alone assures that there's going to be a wide variety of representation. It has to be within the four judicial districts, and they're going to be looking at being sure those user groups out there that are pounding on them are represented on this commission.
Any questions? With that, I guess I will close public testimony then. Representative Kelly, would you like to come back up and let's... Any discussion on the any remainder of the bill or anything else before the committee? Representative Edgman, are you just Representative Gatto?
I'll ask a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know you won't know the answer, but to your knowledge, are you aware of any suits brought against the federal government as a result of the commission?
I am not, Representative Gatto. This, Mr. Chairman, if I might, I think the beauty of this commission is it's the place to work out the stuff that just might be worked out without the suit, and it's a place where Alaskans, representing the interest of typically an Alaskan, can bring to bear, if nothing more than the red face test, why is this person being treated that way? And instead of just having the appeal process go up the federal route and come back from with a nice letter from the delegation indicating that they looked into it and there's nothing they can do, this puts real Alaskans on the ground with an eyeball toward are they following the regulations? Are people on the on the ground being treated fairly and according to the law? And so I think it may well have the effect of preventing lawsuits rather than triggering them.
Any additional questions for the sponsor? Representative Roses?
Through the chair. I do appreciate the legal document that you provided from legal services, but I still have a little bit of concern, even though it is considered an advisory group, mm-hmm. that when you would, it says that the commission may recommend that the attorney general file a lawsuit. I still have the concern that if you recommend it in one case but don't recommend it in the other, you know, the disparity that we have there and the position that it may put us in. But, you know, I'm like you. I hope that it prevents them, not encourages them. But I didn't find the testimony that we received a few minutes ago encouraging. Since the individual who spoke said it would have been nice to have some help on these two lawsuits, that didn't make me feel any better, made me actually feel a little worse. But I still support the concept. I still have some difficulty with this section.
Thank you.
Representative
sponsor object to removing that section on suit?
Yes.
I mean, it seems pretty obvious that commissions have an opportunity to recommend to any department at any time on course of action for the state. Would you object to seeing that? I've never seen that word in any section in any other commission, just browsing through commissions that have
I believe that the I don't know whether you hunt, fish, trap, or out there on the land, but if you are, you know that these difficulties occur, and that if in fact there is abuse and violation of the law relative to how the federal government is implementing law and regulation on the land, that this puts teeth in it. It says this commission can actually look at something, discover an abuse, and they are out there, believe me, and then recommend an action. So I think it what it, and again, just having the power to stated right in the act, saying that they have the power to recommend legal action to the Attorney General, it puts a little more teeth in it, Representative Kawasaki. I think that's why I would have a problem with removing it.
Representative Wolf.
My question is, I guess, if this wasn't in here, wouldn't they do it anyway?
There you go.
Mr. Chairman, I think that you could probably construe it as, since it's not prevented, that they could, but the fact that it's in here and was in here before when the commission was operating, it does give them that step that is kind of fair notice to everyone that they have that ability. They cannot trigger the lawsuit. They can only make a recommendation. So they're strictly advisory in that matter.
Okay. Follow up?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. In the legal memorandum that we got, it says the commission's activities are limited to, and then it goes in what they're limited to, and it doesn't even say anything about the lawsuit. So.
Yeah, I think the point of the legal memo, it's been a day since I read it, but it is to indicate that they are strictly advisory. They cannot trigger an action.
Representative Wilson, I think giving them the ability to make that recommendation and the potential repercussions of not following it through does give it some teeth, and I think it would bring people to the table. If this is a toothless commission, why would anyone meet with them? Why would anyone allow them discovery and testify before them? So I think I do agree that this gives them, although maybe dentures, it does give them some teeth to at least get people to the table and start the negotiations, and then leave it up to the Attorney General to make the final decision. So I don't necessarily think it would be wise to take that out of the bill. But I am one member. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does this go to finance now?
Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, yes, it does.
And I think we talked about it last meeting. It's an indeterminate fiscal note because we don't know how many people will attend the meetings, and we don't know how many meetings there will be.
That's correct. However, it's our anticipation that this fiscal note will get refined.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, it will get refined. It will be a new fiscal note based on the CS because there's changes in that, so there's less numbers of the members, but also because we don't know and have not made the decision, the fiscal decision, on how many people to allow to work there, and what we're really looking at and kind of focusing that down in finance, whether we're going to allow two people or whether we're going to give them a three people, what it's going to be. Those are details we're kind of trying to work out, plus where we're going to house them at. So those things being said, it's indeterminate.
So I guess the answer is we don't know whether it will result in a solid number, Representative Gatto, at this time. But now we've got the parameters set, so perhaps we'll be able to get a more solid note on it.
And I also think with the history of the past commissions, you could extrapolate. Someone should be able to do that. Any additional questions or comments? So, Representative Kawasaki, go ahead.
Is it on the bill in general, or
on the bill in general? I think the, we've.
Is it your intent to move this out?
It is my intent to move this out of the.
Just to comment, then I guess would be just to say that I actually maybe another question, and we kind of chatted a little bit about this, Sue, earlier. Whether there's no other department, no other point person in departmental law, DNR, Fish and Game, that actually reacts to federal issues within the state of Alaska. I just have a little bit of problem with sending more commissions out there. I think we have commissions for too many things right now that, quite frankly, should be done in-house. This committee, for one, could do a lot of those, a lot of these jobs. So there's just, you kind of answered the question before, but can you just elaborate on that answer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kawasaki, I certainly can. There are currently no other departments, agencies, divisions, or otherwise that are representing the public on federal issues. There are ANILCA coordinators in DNR and Fish and Game. That's what Tina Cunning is an ANILCA coordinator for Fish and Game. But they are there for the state, not for the general public. There's nobody representing the general public on these federal land issues. And I can tell you, based on the experience from our office alone, the number of mining complaints that we have, we've got two different trappers who are having difficulties with federal lands and federal bureaucrats, if you will, who are not familiar with ANILCA enough that they can interpret, you know, ANILCA and apply the federal regulations accurately. It's turning into a harassment of our citizens, and that's why this commission is really important. And again, it is on land issues. We're speaking specifically to land issues. Does that answer your question, Representative?
I guess mostly. So, I mean, if I were a user and I had questions or comments to make for the past, whatever, 6-7 years that this commission's been out of order, have I not had a way, an outlet? Could I talk to the, you know, the commissioner's office? Is there a point person there to talk to? Is there any process?
Through the chair, Representative, no, there is not. You've got, the public has us. They have the legislature. They call our offices. And as staff, we don't have the expertise to interpret federal regulations. And as experienced as I am with ANILCA, I can't interpret all of it. And so what has taken me in one case alone over 2 years to try to resolve, this commission probably could have done it in less than a month because they have the expertise as to where we, as their only public entity for them, on, you know, advocate for them, we don't have it.
Representative Kawasaki, are you anything else?
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions, Representative Edgman?
Well, I guess just an observation to me, that's the real question. This whole matter is not that the commission itself would serve a valid purpose or that it would be useful. I think from what I've heard, that it would serve a valid purpose. But the real question seems to me is in the next committee in terms of the bang for the buck and whether each agency having to cut out 10% of their budgets and fiscal shortfalls of $1 million in a couple of years, whether we can, as Representative Kawasaki I think was alluding to in his sort of questioning, we can afford it. So, and that obviously is beyond the purview of this committee, but it, I guess just as that, as an observation, that's where it seems to me we are at the discussion.
And I would not disagree with that, and as I stated earlier, that I'd really rather let the guys that deal with the budget deal with that, and they may deem it not, that it is not something that needs to advance, and that would still have done our job in terms of the resources aspect of it.
Mr. Chairman.
Anything else? Would you like to make a motion, Mr. Rhodes?
No, I was going to ask a question.
Oh, go ahead.
It's already been taken care of with the last two, so that taken care of it for me.
Dr. Wilson.
Yeah. I move the CS for House Bill Number 87 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none, so moved. With that, it is 2:35, and we stand adjourned. Thank you.